Modern Love, the podcast, is supported by...
Produced by the iLab at WBUR, Boston.
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. Do you tell your friends you love them? And do you say it like that, using those three words? Is it easy for you to say? Is it fraught? Ricardo Jaramillo takes on those questions in this week's essay. It's read by Shruti Gatwa. He stars in Sex Education on Netflix.
I'm having L-word troubles, but my troubles don't involve a lover. There's no romance or sex in this. No flowers, candles, or dancing. My L-word troubles are with my boy, my best friend, Kichi. I've told him I love him probably 5 or 6 times now, but he never says it back. When people say, I love you, especially for the first time, there are a number of things they may be saying. Maybe it's, do you love me? The question smuggled inside the confession. Or more urgently, please love me. With Kichi, it's not like that. I know he loves me. I feel it all the time. I don't need to ask for his love. I don't need to wonder. I tell him I love him for a simple reason. Nothing could be more true. But he doesn't say it back. Mostly I've said it when we're leaving each other, a couple of times over the phone, once when I was drunk, another time when he was hurt and I was trying to be supportive. There's always silence for a moment. And then he says something like, yeah, bro, I'll catch you soon. I don't need him to say those exact words to me. I wonder, though, about what keeps him from saying them. What keeps nearly all young men from being able to tell their male friends that they love them? When I was 8, I made my first best friend. Pedro was twig-thin, messy-haired, and jittery, brimming with the kind of untamed tenderness found only in children. When I moved to Philadelphia, he took me, a nervous new boy at school, in his arms and under his wings. Pedro and I spent our weekends on walks with his mother through the forest trails near their house. He and I walked slowly, holding hands while we stepped, interlocking our fingers. To this day, whenever I participate in the sacred human practice of handholding, I think of Pedro. On one of our walks, Pedro and I were interrupted by another boy, Pedro's neighbor, who chopped his hands between ours, startling us. You two hold hands, he said. That's gay. I remember not knowing exactly what gay meant, but sensing in the way other boys wielded the word that it meant something you didn't want to be. I had a terrible feeling that the outside world had broken into our quiet green place. Pedro and I never held hands again. He and I still cared for each other, but that day we learned our care was something we needed to regulate, subdue, place in a chokehold and never let loose. We learned this at the hands of another boy our age, who probably had learned it at the hands of another boy of whatever age. Pedro and I learned what men in America have learned repeatedly. That tenderness must be tamed in accordance with a set of codes we must become fluent in, as if our survival depends on it. This lesson is learned over many years, passed between generations, and like the best taught lessons, it claws into you until you can hardly distinguish where the lesson ends and you begin. Somewhere inside each man is a list of all the other men he's loved without ever finding the words to tell them so. I met Kichi in the middle of my freshman year, when I was once again a nervous new kid, this time throwing a party. I've gone through life with a rotating set of anxious tics. That year, I'd become fond of swinging my university lanyard with my key in circles, wrapping and unwrapping it around my finger. When people started flowing into my dorm room, I began my nervous swinging, not noticing what I was doing until I heard a crack and saw that my key had struck a stranger's iPhone screen, leaving a minor scratch. That stranger was Kichi. My first message to him was an apology, sent the next morning. He was kind and forgiving. We agreed to hang out. Freshman year is an easy time to attach to people. I started hanging out with Kichi more and more, almost every day, then several times a day. When it was time to choose housing for sophomore year, we decided to room together. We fell into each other's lives quickly because we were both hungry for closeness in a new place. We stayed in each other's lives because nothing has ever felt more natural. Kichi and I are both mixed race, with white mothers, immigrant fathers, and hard to pronounce names. We are from cities, him Seattle, me Philadelphia, that we take pride in. But mostly, we are different. He's calm, cool, rides a skateboard, keeps his clothes neatly folded, writes poems, and loves immunology. When he's sad, he doesn't stay sad for long. I admire how quietly deliberate Kichi is and the balance he brings to his life. When I go to him with girlfriend problems, writing problems, or any other kind of problems, some little thing he says or notices always stays with me for days. I appreciate his steadiness, and he appreciates how emotional I am, how I'm rarely balanced or collected at all, how I'm messy and clumsy. As we became closer friends, I started taking some of him with me, and he started taking some of me with him. He appreciates the mess of me, which is maybe how I know that he loves me. What else is there to love anyway? The codes men follow in love are tricky. For example, while saying a straight, "I love you," is frowned upon, sometimes saying to another man, "much love," or "I got love for you," is okay. "I love you" might even be passable if it is quickly followed by "bro" or "man." These are the linguistic gymnastics masculinity asks us to perform, the negotiations we make through language to keep within the acceptable bounds of manhood. A footnote should be added to the code. Sometimes the most inconvenient or terrible circumstances can occasion an acceptable expression of love, but only at that moment, never to be spoken of again. 2 years ago, Kichi and I took semesters off from college and spent that time in Colombia, where my father's from. One day, while in the coastal town of Capugana, I got so suddenly sick with fever and dizziness that I dropped to my knees while walking on the beach. I was scared to be mysteriously ill in a place where I knew it could be hard to find help. Kichi searched all over town for a doctor. When he couldn't find one, he decided his pre-med coursework would have to do, and he tended to me. He put his hand on my forehead. He whispered into my ear. He told me over and over that I was going to be okay, until I was. This was perhaps our most intimate moment, brought about by my sickness and unthinkable at any other time. This is the code, as intricate as it is far-reaching. Kichi and I do not possess the flagship qualities of masculine college boys. We aren't in fraternities or on sports teams. We have even talked more than once about masculinity and the illogical things it requires of us. But still, we have lived in this world. We grew up as boys in America. We learned this code and we practice it. There's no immunity. There's a part of this story I haven't admitted yet. Each time I say, "I love you," to Kichi, it feels uncomfortable. I feel the weirdness of it even in myself. The lesson is burrowed in that deep. I hesitate, flinch, but in my conscious mind, I know it's what I want to say, so I try to say it. I want to say, "I love you," to Kichi, and mean just that. I don't want there to be any desire or questioning or expectation lurking inside my words. I want to love in a way that surpasses the need for affirmation, for return. This is what I have come to know as the purest kind of love, expecting nothing back. I remain hopeful. It's not that I need to hear those words. I'm just ready to be free from all the forces, voices, and gestures that keep us from saying them. Still, I can't help but wish that one day Kichi will forego all the masculine clatter, look me in the eyes, and simply say, I love you too.
That's Shruti Gatwa reading Ricardo Jaramillo's essay, Why Can't Men Say I Love You to Each Other? We'll catch up with Ricardo after the break. Ricardo Jaramillo's essay was a finalist in the 2019 Modern Love College Essay Contest. We talked to him in May, and he told us that after his essay was published, he got a lot of messages from people telling him they loved him. Some of those messages were from friends, and some were from people he'd had a class with once. As for whether Kichi said it?
That's a million-dollar question of this article. No, I don't know. I mean, the short answer is no. But I don't think much actually hinges on him saying that in our relationship. I guess that's sort of how I wouldn't want people to misread the piece. Like, he's just someone that has loved me really well and, like, completely shaped my life. And, like, I hope that's made clear in the writing. And maybe one day I will just open the door and he will be there with some sort of Love Actually type poster board situation. You know, if he needed me tomorrow, like, I would drive to Seattle, even though my license is expired and there's a pandemic. Like, you know, like, whatever he needed, like, I would do it. And, like, I know that if I called him and he needed me, like, his license is probably not expired. But, like, he would probably come. I don't want to make any promises for him. But I imagine he would.
Ricardo says that language fails men in a lot of ways, not just around the phrase, I love you.
There's a poet, Ocean Vuong, that talks, like, so beautifully about it, where it's like so much of the language of, that boys use to talk about victory is so connected to violence. Like, you killed it, you kicked the shit out of them, all this stuff. So I think sort of cooked into the language that we have are these sort of bounds, like, only go this far. And that's what's, there's some sort of natural collision that occurs between those bounds and then where our love might ask us to go. The two languages in my life are English and Spanish. In English, we have one word for love. In Spanish, there's two words for love, querer and amar. You know, I hope that in 200 years, we live in worlds where there's a lot more language available to us. Like, I hope that we have, like, 30 words available to us for love, because I think that will mean as a society that we've worked to know it better. I feel like in a lot of ways, the piece is about affection and, like, how we can sort of translate or communicate or lay bare in words our affection. And we are in, like, just such a heartbreaking moment. And I think that one of the only responses to that is to sort of drop down into the human and, like, and participate in affection. I think that's sort of, like, what can save us.
That's Ricardo Jaramillo. He's a teacher, essayist, and Fulbright scholar. His latest essay will be published this week through WHYY, Philadelphia's public radio station. More after the break. Here's Daniel Jones, editor of the Modern Love column for the New York Times.
Ricardo's essay came in as part of our last college essay contest, and I thought it was such a brave exploration of toxic masculinity and its causes and effects. And one line in particular really struck me, where he talks about tenderness is something that must be tamed. And how much damage that goes on to cause in families and relationships and in the world. It's sort of incredible to me how that starts, you know, in childhood through shaming and works its way through our education system and has these lifelong implications. So to read Ricardo's essay was just such a refreshing look at where this comes from and how hopefully it can be undone.
And here's Shruti Gatwa on why he chose to read this piece.
I think I was just drawn to how honest it was. And I mean, I think in society, we're having a real rethink about masculinity and what it means. And I think that this piece kind of encapsulated like that kind of conversation. As a man myself, as a boy, I'm very aware of all these codes. I grew up with them. There really is like an unwritten code of masculinity that I think needs to be broken. And I think we as humans need to not be afraid to say that we love each other and not hold back from that. Because I think the more love we can get in this world, the better.
Thank you to Shruti for recording himself at home. You can see him now in the Netflix show Sex Education. Modern Love is a production of the New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It's produced, directed, and edited by Caitlin O'Keefe. Original scoring and sound design by Matt Reed. Iris Adler is our executive producer. We are edited by Catherine Brewer. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for the New York Times and advisor to the show. Special thanks to Julia Simon, Anya Stremian, and Mia Lee at the New York Times, and to Michael Garth at WBUR. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Additional music courtesy of APM. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. See you next week.